Last Monday, 49,000 CAO applicants received an offer from the CAO. Up to this morning, 28,600 students have accepted a place, which brings the total number of acceptances, including earlier rounds to mature, PLC and deferred applicants, to 35,835. There's exactitude for you. And the remainder are still considering their options. For those students who haven't received an offer or are unclear about the CAO process, Brian Mooney, teacher and Irish Times education columnist, is here to help, and he's the man responsible for the exactitude, not me. I deal in round numbers. Okay, how, first of all, is the acceptance process going?
The CAO are very, very happy with the way the process is going to date. They've identified one problem which comes up every single year. They write to everybody in May and they say, this is what we have on our files relating to you. And in some cases, there is a gap. They don't know that somebody's doing the Leaving Cert this year. Now, that can happen because the SEC sends over a disc of everybody who's registered. But if you registered for the CAO using your Irish version of your name, and in your school you're registered in English, or there's some slight difference, there's a middle initial missing or something, it doesn't transfer over. But they're telling you that in May. But if you just leave that letter there, you're studying for the Leaving Cert, they don't know you've got the Leaving Cert, so you didn't get an offer on Monday. Or you have a, say for instance, you have an exemption in Irish, but you didn't go to the NUI, you didn't register it, or if you did, you never told the CAO. Once you've registered with the NUI, you're fine. Or you had an exemption, say, in a foreign language. If you haven't done any of that stuff, will you get in contact with the CAO, because that's why you didn't get an offer. And once you tell them, if there are places still available in round two, you'll get the offer and they'll try and make sure you do.
Okay. What advice, though, have you got for students who have accepted their place over the last 2 days?
Well, the first bit of advice is to obviously ensure that when the registration process comes up, you're there on time. Within every college, within every course, many of them have modules that have choices. And once you register for those choices, it's a simple fact of physical location. If there's 40 places in a classroom for a particular subject, once the 40th person is registered, under health and safety, they can't get it let in at 41st. So I've come across situations where people who've turned up late for the registration process have found that the subjects they were actually intending to study are all full, and they're being left with other subjects that they don't really want to do. Now, the universities, for instance, now UCD has allowed students to pre-select two subjects in the arts degree to get over this problem, and other colleges to do similar things. But I would give a simple word of advice relating to registration. Once your registration date comes, if you're there early and you go in and you
say, this is physically there, this is not something that's done
online. You can do it online. Yeah. It may be an online registration process, or it may be you actually have to go to the college. But if there is a registration process, I would go and do it. Now, the second issue for students, and many of them have already done it, they got their offer on Monday. Many of them were in the car heading to whatever town or city, whatever it was, to get accommodation. And as we saw earlier in the week, you know, there's a real acute problem building up in Dublin. There's quite a shortage of student accommodation in the city, and it's getting quite pricey. But there is a real problem here. Students who have accepted a second or third offer, hoping to maybe get a higher preference, they have to secure accommodation now in case they don't get a higher preference. Yeah. But if they do, we've had situations in the past where they have been refused deposits, even though they haven't even taken up the accommodation. And the landlord is guaranteed to get another student, you know, in a situation. So I would say to landlords, if you find yourself in a situation where a student is in this situation, please, you know, even they may have signed a contract or a lease with you, you know, be understanding. Families are under huge financial pressure. And, you know, losing a whole month's rent, it could be catastrophic for a student in this situation.
And as you say, the landlord will get somebody else.
Of course they will. I mean, it's just a question of transferring over. So I would say to them, you know, please be, you know, sensitive in this situation, because students are in a very difficult financial situation in many circumstances.
Okay, something we talked about on Monday, and I want you to remind us about it, or what's involved here. A number of callers have to the Irish Times help desk, for example, are confused about the random selection process and how that works. They have published minimum points required for their course, so they've got those points, but they haven't received an offer.
I saw a national media organisation, it wasn't RTE, the other day, and they had a piece in which somebody was saying that it's random selection, pulling names from a hat. As you and I know from our conversation on Monday, it's not pulling names from a hat. When you get to a scenario where effectively we have less places left than the number of people left on the minimum point, the last point in, they actually take your CAO number and it becomes a mathematical number. And the highest of those numbers get the number of places that are still available.
And how are those numbers generated?
They're generated by the computer. When you put in your application in January, the computer...
I mean, I know it's not technically pulling names out of a hat, but doesn't it amount to the same thing? I mean, it's just you happen to have this CAO number.
Exactly.
So.
But the point is, for people to understand, if you're in the position... You know, will I come out of the hat next or whatever? You're in a situation where you're on a list of numerical numbers and there are a few of you still left who haven't got a place on that particular point. And the CAO and the colleges do genuinely make an effort next week on the 29th to clear as many if they can of those remaining on it. They can't do it every time because if you've got, say, for instance, lab facilities or, you know, say it was dentistry and you have X number of chairs, you can't take extra people in. But they do genuinely. But that's how the system works. And a lot of people are confused. Will I get an offer? Won't I get an offer? It's down to your place on that mathematical number you got when you applied to the CAO the first time round.
OK. Vacant places that have yet to be filled, were published on the CAO website yesterday.
They're
available. Tell us how this works because it's complex.
It is really, really complex. Obviously, like any organisation, a shop or anything, you try and sell your product. And as of yesterday, the colleges that had yet to sell their product, i.e. the place on their course, listed those courses on the CAO website. Now, they are now open to both existing students who can amend their application record, but only to place a vacant place on the list somewhere. They can't reorder the existing courses. They can't do any of that stuff. They can simply place a vacant place anywhere they want on that list. Anybody out there who might now decide, God, I'd love to go to college, and there's a course there in the vacant places list, they can actually apply today to the CAO as a new applicant, putting in a full application, and they will
be... Can they only apply for a vacant place?
They can only apply for a vacant place. Okay. They can only apply for the vacant places. Now, the vacant places that are up there, they're quite wide. There are 34 level 8 degrees within the state sector and 34 within the private colleges. And at level 7, 6, there are 94 courses.
That's
34 separate courses.
Yeah, courses, exactly. So we're not just talking about
No, we're talking about 34 separate courses.
That is a lot, or potentially a lot.
Within the state sector. And in the private colleges, the fee-paying colleges, there's 34 other level 8 courses. And at level 7, 6, there are 94 programmes, 51 of them, again, within the state sector, and 43 of them. Now, the private colleges charge fees of between 4,000 and 5,000 a year. But they also attract tax relief at 20%. You compare that now with registration charges at 2,500. There's not a huge gap, so don't be completely put off.
And those registration charges will be going up.
And those registration charges are going to 2,750 and 3,000 over the next 2 years. But the private colleges, and the private colleges are still, because they are private in a sense, you know, they are still literally have the entire spectrum of courses. So if you were interested in anything, go onto the vacant places and you'll see it. There's just one word of caution I would give to you. That a year spent in a private college, if you went into a private college, I've come across people in the past who've gone to a private college, dropped out, then applied back to the CAO for a state place and ended up being levied with fees. And they said, but how come I was in private? I paid for it entirely last year. The Department of Education and Skills say that because you're entitled to the 20% tax relief on your private fees, they regard you in the exact same circumstances as if you had taken a free place in a state-funded college. And if you do drop out, you'll have to pay fees. So effectively...
It
does seem unfair, but I would suggest to you, therefore, it's not a value-free choice in terms of, well, I'll do a private college for a year and then I'll go back into the state sector. Now, I just want to give you some examples of what's actually on offer.
Just before you do that, there's one other caveat, I think, with the vacant places.
Yes.
And that is, if you are applying, if you have already applied and you now want to add a vacant place, it's important where you put it.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Thank you for reminding me of that, Miles. Yes, absolutely important. If you want that course and it's the dream course and you've suddenly seen it and you want it, well, then put it at the top of your list.
Yeah.
If you have still a hope that in round two or round three, a course that is towards the top of your list may come down in points, place the vacant place course underneath that course. you may well be offered the vacant place course next Thursday, but you are still therefore in line for the course on your existing application if the points do come down. But by putting it above it, you're actually cutting yourself out of that opportunity.
A couple of questions, and they yes. seem like very, very intelligent questions to me, which is probably why I didn't ask them. Re-random selection.
Yes.
Would you recommend, there are two of them here which are yeah. pretty much the same, would
yes.
you recommend applying early or late to the CAO in order to have a better chance in random selection, or does it matter?
I haven't a clue. I don't know how they generate the
right.
number. You know, a student goes in, they fit, and the
you
computer
would think
comes back.
If you applied early that you would get number one,
yeah.
and if you applied last, you'd get number 50,000.
Well, it's a 7 or 8 digit number,
yeah.
so it cannot possibly be numerical applications. It's a long number, so effectively
yeah.
it can't. Whether the computer, because of this exact process, generates it by some random process to make sure that there's no unfairness in the that if you applied on the.
Okay, so we can't specifically answer the question. It might be an interesting one to find out. But what we can say is that if you know exactly what you want to do, why not apply?
Well, I will
as
actually
early
ask
possible.
The CAO today, and I will
yeah.
get back to you and let you know whether
yeah.
in fact it's a totally random generated number and has no effect whether you apply early or late. I suspect that's the case.
That's a very, very interesting question
okay.
indeed. Okay, now some of these the courses you were talking about.
Yeah, let's
colleges.
Have a look. For instance, a number of colleges are offering Level 8 engineering degrees. NUI Maynooth is offering electronic engineering, both on its own and in computing. And the DIT is offering manufacturing design engineering, and IT TAL is offering mechanical and electronic engineering. Now, of course, I have to point out that even though they're on the vacant places list, they are still requiring the basic minimum entry requirements. They haven't waived any entry requirements. So obviously for Level 8 degrees in engineering, you need your higher level C in maths. And for some people, they are still, if they haven't got that, there are a number of courses, for instance. But you couldn't now, for instance, sit. The DIT in Galway are running a special maths exam today. This is an exam that colleges run internally for people who have failed to get the required grade in the maths at higher level.
But have the points.
And they're doing it for their existing students. But, for instance, a vacant place student, say somebody who's looking at the NUI Maynooth offering of the two Level 8 engineering degrees I mentioned. Maynooth are running this exam on Friday. So if you decided today you wanted that vacant place in Maynooth, you could put it on the vacant place, contact NUI Maynooth today, turn up there on Friday and do the exam.
Mm.
Waterford, WIT, is running a special maths exam this Friday, but it's for all higher and ordinary who failed. But it doesn't relate to specifically because they don't have one of these courses we're talking about here.
So there are still
so
lots of options.
That's at the engineering. And I want to deal specifically with that because there could be people out there for whom that option would be attractive right now. Looking at other Level 8 courses, you've got IT Letterkenny is offering Applied Computing. IT Dundalk is offering Accounting and Finance and Business Surveying, or Building Surveying, sorry. And IT Sligo is offering Level 8 degrees as well in this area. And as I mentioned on Monday, NUI Maynooth is offering their Kilkenny campus First Arts at 310 points specifically for students in the Kilkenny region who can then transfer to NUI Maynooth next year for second and third year. Will transfer. There's no second or third year in the Kilkenny campus. And the entry requirements for Maynooth Arts was 460. For students Kilkenny Carlow who want to do arts in Maynooth and didn't get it, here's an attractive option.
Okay, very much
okay.
so. You can get in with 310 points. Now, obvious question, I suppose. I have accepted the place offered by the CAO, but I'm hoping that the points may come down for one of my higher preferences. What are my chances?
Well, again, the second round offers will be on Thursday the 29th. The only thing I would say to you is the admissions officers, when they make the offers, it's like selling seats on an airline. They actually offer over and above the number of places they have available because they know there will be some people who can't accept for all sorts of reasons. And therefore, if there are places on offer on the second round, it's because that calculation...
They don't have to come round at the end offering people places in a hotel for the night if they all actually accept the places,
but
do they?
Listen, it has happened.
Oh,
it
dear.
Happens where the university finds an admission officer has to go to the head of the faculty and say, listen, I have 30 more students for you than you actually wanted because I've got a huge acceptance. It happened in UCD about 3 years ago. They offered 50 places over and above as they did every year. And when science turned that year, suddenly they had 50 more students and it was a problem.
As I
so
say,
that can happen.
Hotel for the night is just not going to it's
exactly.
not, just not going to happen.
But so therefore I'm saying that, you know, it's about 4% of
right.
places are offered next Thursday
okay.
week. So, you know, 4%.
Okay. Repeating the Leaving Cert, what kind of an option is that?
The repeat of the Leaving Cert, I would say that, you know, since the HPAT for medicine thing came in, which was where a lot of people were repeating the Leaving Cert, the numbers have actually dropped. They're well under 2,000 now. If you have looked at your Leaving Cert result and said, I can't live with this, I did nothing last year, a complete disaster, I can't go through the rest of my life saying this is my Leaving Cert. If you can see how you're actually going to change your behaviour next year, how you're actually going to have a study programme, etc., go back there and do it. CDVC, for instance, have very, very good repeat Leaving Certs in Rathmines, in Plunkett College, in Pierce College, and in Ringsend. And obviously, a number of schools also run specific repeat Leaving Cert classes. But don't get into it and then do, you know, what you did last year, because if you do what you did, you get what you got. So it's really an option for people who, you know, really see that, you know, the result they got was not a fair reflection of their ability.
I'm just wondering, are there any statistics or is there anecdotal evidence on whether repeating the Leaving Cert gets better results? Does anybody
in a situation where somebody does what we've just said, or where, look, for instance, Miles, we've had families that have been going through really difficult medical situations where parents have been sick or dying.
Or now financial situations.
Or financial situations. Where your concentration and your ability to prepare for an exam, or you yourself got ill, you know. And in those situations, students get dramatically different results when you get beyond that situation. And again, if somebody really has a Damascus Road conversion in relation to how they actually worked and really changed, yes. But if you just go back because you can't think of anything better to do, you're going to get the same result as last year.
Okay. If you didn't secure sufficient points to receive any offer on any of your CAO course choices, what about the PLC option? Talk to me. Tell me about a bit about PLCs.
The post-leaving cert sector is a really, really vibrant sector. It's not just for school leavers. It's for adults, etc. About 30,000 people each year enroll on the post-leaving cert.
I mean, I was surprised when I saw that figure. I thought there might be an extra naught there.
No.
30,000. Because there are so many people who are not involved.
Exactly.
Didn't do the Leaving Cert.
It's adults. Exactly. And there are adults who are in their 20s and 30s who return to do PLCs. For instance, somebody who becomes unemployed and finds that the skills that they had when they got work 20 years ago just can't get them back into the labour market. Many of them do PLC courses that actually get them back into it. Now, for instance, in the areas like vocational areas like hairdressing, security studies, you're only going to get courses in that area in the PLC sector, certainly in the state sector. And to get into, you know, to gain entry to a course that you did not have sufficient points for in the Leaving Cert, we're talking about a CAO course, you can now use the PLC course. So you don't have to repeat the Leaving Cert. We talked about the number of places that have been offered. There were a batch of places offered at the end of July by the CAO specifically to these people, because their award, they knew about their award since June. They weren't waiting till August. So those people, about 2,000 of them, got places awarded to them at the end of July. And they reserved places. There were reserved places. For instance, science in UCD have quadrupled the number of reserved places that they've had for PLC students. Mm. And quite a number of students got into science in UCD this year from PLC course in the area of science.
And if you've done a PLC course, when you go into first year science in UCD, are you starting from scratch and are you just paying the normal registration
Absolutely.
Fee?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. There is no additional charges whatsoever. I'll give you an example, for instance. In Cavan Institute, you can do a PLC in, say, culture and heritage studies, and then use the points from that course to go to an arts degree in NUI in Galway, or sorry, in Maynooth. Nursing is another option. You use the PLC course. Now, the number of places for nursing PLCs into nursing degrees in Ireland is quite small, but you can also go to the UK as well. And, you know, the area you are interested in, rather than spend 4 years in an area on a punt, if you do a PLC for a year, you actually see whether you're really, really interested. I was talking to one of the admissions people in Cavan Institute about this last night, and they said that they had a student who did a PLC. They did a Leaving Cert applied, then they did a PLC in security studies, and then they were working in the security industry. They then went on and did a Bachelor of Arts in Criminal Justice and are now looking at doing a Master's in Human Resource Management, coming from a Leaving Cert applied programme. So the PLC
route...
Probably
be a judge in a couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, they have degrees, they have areas like business and computing, etc. And they also have... really important for students. A lot of the actual grading in PLCs is on continuous assessment. It's not about terminal exams. Mm. So people who really excel in doing, you know, ongoing assessment can do it this way.
Okay, I want to finish off by talking to you about European universities.
Yes.
But another question on random selection. I missed my first choice by 5 points. The course was subject to random selection. If I get the extra 5 points on a recheck, am I excluded from the random selection anyway?
No.
Oh.
And what actually happens there? Here's a really, really, this is really the mastermind one. If you go up, your number is then placed in the number it would originally have been on that random list if, in fact, you'd been there in the first place. And if that number in on that list gives you a place that you would have got, you automatically get that offer. If it's below the cutoff point, you don't. But you are put on that list. Now, what actually happens there is somebody got a place on that random list that wouldn't have got it if you were higher, and they retain their place, but you don't lose out.
Right, that's incredibly complicated, and I'm not sure if I understand it, and I hope our listeners do.
But all right.
Let's not go there.
Okay.
You've spoken in the past about the growing number of European universities
yes.
who offer degree programmes at reasonable costs,
yes.
taught through English, which yes. is obviously important. Explain this phenomenon and explain the extent to which Irish people are taking advantage of it.
Yeah. You see, in Europe, their problem is demographic. You know, the population of European countries is going down considerably because they just aren't having enough children. And that's reflected in their universities. And they've now started to offer degrees to English because most children in Europe speak English as a second or third language. And this obviously falls right into our court. And there's an organisation, a guy down in Ennis, Guy Flouch, and he has set up this UNICAS website, which effectively lists each one of these 800 courses. And he actually has courses that are still available, believe it or not, for this year. And down in West Cork, Tim O'Leary handles specifically the medical and veterinary applications for Hungary, Budapest, etc. Now, what Irish students have been going to the medical veterinary ones for about 10 years, but they're now going to these European universities doing physiotherapy, international law, psychology, business, game design and science. And the liberal arts programmes, particularly in the Dutch universities, are becoming really attractive. And 7 of these Dutch universities we're talking about have higher rate rankings than Trinity. We're not talking about colleges where you might be getting in because it's not of a high quality. And the popularity, we don't have these in Ireland, but the popularity of liberal arts and science degrees where you can actually do the equivalent of a science and an arts degree combined, and they end up either with a BA or a BSc depending on their second and third year specialisations. So effectively, you know, this gives people an option they don't even have in this country. And the wonderful thing about that is that the entry requirements in many of these colleges are matriculation.
Mm.
Full stop. Now, fees, we're talking about €1,800 in Holland. You're talking in Denmark and Scandinavia, nil. And, you know, we can put up a list of these because we have them. And I am. If you go onto the UNICAS website, you'll actually find a list of the degree programs.
EUN, just in case anybody uses it. It's not UN. EUNICAS.
EUNICAS, yes.
I
mean, for instance, still for this year, you know, you've got medical degrees in a number of universities. You have physiotherapy, game design, humanities, business, international law and psychology still available, and science. And then, of course, obviously, if anybody's looking at this and says, well, as well as the CAO next year, maybe I look at this option as well. You know, you've got the medicine, dentistry, the veterinary science, the physiotherapy, the liberal arts and sciences, psychology, sports management. You've got international business, international relations and politics, games design, engineering and life science. And as I say, Denmark fees are free, as is Sweden, Norway, Finland and Malta. Austria, they're between free and €750. Germany, between free and €1,500. Switzerland, 500 to 1,500 euros. Netherlands, 1,835. And Italy, between 600 and 3,600, depending upon your financial circumstances. And
it is, though, going to cost you more if you are, you know, it's probably going to cost you more to live in a place like the Netherlands.
They would, but for instance, you can get a tuition fee loan in the Netherlands and in Bulgaria as well. And grants are available if you are working for a minimum of, say, 8 hours a week. So you go to the Netherlands, you get an address, you can then apply for a student loan. If you get a job at the weekend for 8 hours, you then get a grant from the Dutch government because you're working in Holland to actually study. And there was a really interesting case in the European Court a couple of months ago in which the Danish government were giving their own students grants of €650 a month. And the European Court found that they had to extend those grants to any student from the EU studying in Denmark. So that'll be an interesting one to see.
Why isn't everybody doing this?
Well, this is why we're talking about it. You know, what I'm saying to you, if you are sitting out there miles, and you are frustrated because you want to be a physiotherapist, you want to do psychology, and you know you're not going to go beyond 400 points, and you know it's 500, and in Ireland you're never going to get it in a particular area. Open your eyes. Think outside the box. We are living within a European Union. There are opportunities there. And if you actually look at the costings, you know, now there are differences in entry requirements. You may have to make a personal statement. You may have to do an interview, etc. And if you look at the cost of living index, many of these countries on the cost of living index are much lower than Dublin.
True.
So effectively living there.
Although if you want to come over and back for Christmas and holidays and that.
Well,
kind
then
of
you always have a certain airline who we won't mention on air who you might travel with.
But again, in relation to this, you say that matriculation basically will get you into these universities. I mean, what does that mean?
2 C's on higher papers and 4 D's on past papers.
So very, very small number of points. So you're talking about the low, couple of hundred points.
Couple of hundred points. And again, personal statement, interview. Now, I would say one thing to you. I was over in Maastricht last year at the University of Maastricht, which teaches everything exclusively through English now, everything. And the one thing that students there said to me in relation to this programme was, it's very easy to get into European universities because it's seen as a constitutional right to go to university in many countries. But it's tough to get out of first year if you don't really work. Because the continuous assessment, you get, for instance...
that's your problem.
You get a batch of work on Monday and you have to present on Friday. And a lot of the week is your own research and presentation, and you're marked on Friday on that week's work and you move on. And if you don't really apply yourself...
I mean, I would say hallelujah.
Hallelujah, I agree with you. But what I'm saying is, if you go there and think, you know, God, I'm really going to blow it in first year, you'll be gone, you'll be home. You'll be home at the end of first year. Mm. And some of the failure rates for domestic students can be as high as 30 or 40% on some courses. So yes, it's a fantastic opportunity, but you really have to be committed to what you're doing.
So let me get this clear. You're saying that there are some universities out there in Europe which are perhaps top 100 universities.
Absolutely, yes.
On the Times Higher Education
Absolutely, yes.
That you can get into those universities with a, you know, points, maybe 250 points thereabouts.
Yes.
When you get in there, you can get a grant. If you work a few hours at the weekend, you can get a grant.
Yes, yes.
And you can get some of your fees paid.
Yes. And I mean, I spoke to some Irish students out there who are actually working in call centres because of the quality of their English and were really sought after doing weekend shifts. And as a result of that, they were therefore entitled to a grant, etc.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, you are giving a lot of students out there who perhaps have underachieved,
yes,
but are still have the ambition and the drive to go
and
to university
and work. And have the ambition and drive and are prepared to
work. You're giving
work
them hope.
And here's another thing, Miles. If you go to Europe and you're spending, say, 3 or 4 years studying in a Dutch or a German university, you develop, like an Irish student in an Irish university, a whole network of friends, connections, etc. And whereas in Ireland, from an economic perspective, our markets are really strong in the UK and in America and in Australia. Why? Because of all the connections that we've had and built up over the years. We don't have a culture of those connections in Europe. And therefore, our business relationships and the amount of market share we have right across everything we do here may be lower in Europe than it could possibly be. Look at the effect of 10 years of Irish students going and making those connections and then going into employment, either in those countries or coming back. It would transform our capacity to trade in Europe. And I think from a national point of view, it would also be really, really attractive.
And just in terms of going to our nearest neighbour,
yes,
has that evaporated completely since they started charging 9,000 quid a year to go to university?
They charge 9,000 years a year to go to university in England.
Yeah, oh, in England, of course, yes.
Yes.
In Scotland.
In Scotland, because of they have their own domestic government and they have a free fees initiative. And you can go to Scotland now and it will not cost you anything like 9,000 euro. But 3,500 in Northern Ireland. Some of the Welsh universities are advertising special deals for Ireland, etc. And low fees, etc. But England is 9,000, and other than students who want to go to Oxford and Cambridge for particular degrees and see 9,000 in that context as, you know, basically cheap in relation, say, for instance, to what they'd pay in America if they're going to Harvard or one of the big universities over there. That, you know, the mass market in the UK, because of the 9,000 sterling, which turns into about 12,000 euros and the accommodation, you really...
It's dead as far as Irish students are concerned.
Yeah, to a large extent,
much,
yes. Yeah.
Okay, so Scotland or perhaps Wales, but definitely not England. Brian, thank you very much.
Thank you, Miles.
Indeed, for that, that's Brian Mooney. We'll take a break.